This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
All right, good morning, and God bless each of you. This is a really fun topic to talk about. I love my job at Christian Aid, and I've told people before if I could choose a job and choose the details of what I do, I'm not exactly sure what I would change because I really, really like it. Now, part of that work, in addition to this, is giving presentations at churches and schools, so it's varied. I'm not sitting in the at the desk all day, every day, but the majority of my life, or my waking hours that I'm not home, are spent working on gathering information from the field and trying to brainstorm along with others that are a part of our public relations team and creating that link between the field and the support base. So it's always something that we're brainstorming about, trying to improve as time goes on. And it's a job that I love. It's an opportunity to just keep learning and learning about what's happening in many, many places around the world on an ongoing basis. Now, something I really like to do is get other nonprofit newsletters. And I was thinking with this sign-up sheet that's available here, I should maybe just sign up for all the newsletters from all the nonprofits that are represented here, because that is a really, really good way to get ideas of what you want to do, or maybe what you don't want to do, too. But that's something I enjoy doing. We get sometimes sheaves of mail at home from a variety of different places, and it's a good way to think of other ways to present your programs to your support base. Today, we'll be going over a variety of things. Now, this presentation here will be, a lot of it will be in relation to fundraising, because that is one of the main purposes of Christian Aid's newsletters, even though we have a variety of others that serve a variety of purposes. But we'll also talk about how to relate to your audience, because I think that's a really, really important thing. You identify your audience and figure out how to relate to that audience and what connects with them and what won't connect with them, because you can very easily turn a person against your organization just with a very simple thing that you published in your newsletter. And also, I would like to talk a bit about what a good newsletter includes and what a good newsletter does not include. Now, if you get newsletters in your mailbox, there is no doubt about it that the newsletter is an image of the organization and carries with it a certain amount of credibility. Now, I didn't choose to get any newsletters from an organization other than Christian Aid and project them up here. That probably wouldn't have been good. There are many, many very, very good newsletters, by the way, coming from the nonprofits here. But if you would go to your mailbox and get newsletters, and the one is like this, tastefully designed, clear pictures, just a comfortable look. And versus if you would go to your mailbox and get a newsletter from a nonprofit that would look something like that, you know, pictures scrunched and squished, really dark, you're not sure what you're seeing, really high-pressure fundraising trying to make you feel guilty if you don't contribute, fonts that you can hardly read, and material that's a little less than tasteful. Somehow or another, that is, whether we like it or not, that is the image of our organization. Okay, what is the purpose of your newsletter? And I think answering this question is really important, because that will, what are you trying to be effective at? If you're having an effective newsletter, what is the purpose of your newsletter? Is it to inform your supporters about what is happening as far as people that are already contributing? Does it have to do with fundraising for your organization? Does it have to do with presenting prayer needs so people are able to pray for your organization? Is it a means of encouragement for your supporters? Is it informing supporters of what is happening with their funds? In other words, they're already supporting, and you're just informing them what is happening with the funds that they are contributing. And maybe I should just mention here at the beginning, and I won't get into great detail because that would be a session for an auditor, but there are legal restrictions connected with soliciting funds throughout the United States. So that's something to keep in mind, that it's not a free-for-all, just send mailings to all 50 states saying we need funding and receiving those fundings. There is legal registration that needs to take place. And that's one of the reasons that you'll see this sea of fine print on the back of Christian Aid's newsletter. And it's kind of a fascinating system, really. Actually, one of them here, North Carolina, is bold. And you probably would wonder why, if you even bother to read that fine print, why is North Carolina bold? And that's because North Carolina says they need to be bold. That's their requirement. And they'll say some would say that it needs to be a certain font size. We need to be bold, so on and so forth. So there are legal issues connected with soliciting for funds. So that's something that you probably should keep in mind if you are doing fundraising. All right, fundraising. Is it a bad word? And some people seem to think so, that fundraising is kind of a less than desirable work. But it isn't a bad word. According to Proverbs 31:9, we have a responsibility to, quoted directly, that it says, "Open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy." And I know we have a variety of organizations being represented here. I think there's one prison ministry, and I'm not sure what all your organizations represent. So some of you might not be dealing with impoverished people, but I assume probably most of us are dealing with impoverished people of some sort, whether spiritually or physically. So we do have a responsibility to plead the cause. We become aware of these needs, and these needs are staring us in the face, and we can create a valuable link between that need and people that want to help. And that is a tremendous blessing in the setting that we are working in. Is in the among conservative Mennonites, people really, really want to help. They really, really do. And we can fulfill a vital role in creating that link between the people that want to help and the people that need help. The Apostle Paul was a fundraiser, probably one of the first fundraisers mentioned in the New Testament. And he was a little bit of a high-pressure fundraiser, maybe a little more than I would be. 1 Corinthians 16:1-2. "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come." So Paul is basically saying that you'd better do it. You need to commit to yourself that you will do it. And some people take that approach to fundraising, that this is something that you need to do. And I'm certainly not faulting the Apostle Paul. He had the authority to do that. But we'll talk a little bit later about how applying undue pressure can be counterproductive. So fundraising is not a bad word, and it's not something that we need to apologize for. What are effective ways to raise funds? And the whole thing here won't be entirely about fundraising. We will get into some other things too. Pressure. We talked a bit about that. Is that an effective way to cultivate interest in your organization, by applying pressure? Manipulation or incentives. You support us and we'll send you a free hat or something like that. Or even some people have the approach that probably most of you have gotten address labels in the mail. And the idea behind that is, here is something for you, and you should feel like that you should give a contribution at the very least to cover the cost of these address labels. And in many cases, I would just be glad for the address labels. But I'm thankful that within our setting, we for the most part don't need to use those types of things? Or is it opportunity, giving opportunity? And that's something I would like to emphasize, is that that is the greatest way of fundraising, is just presenting opportunity. Like I had said before, our people from our setting want opportunity, and they're thankful for that link. Probably most of you have gotten calls from organizations. They have solicitors that call on the phone to try to drum up funds, and they can apply, put you on a guilt trip, apply pressure, excessive phone calls, incentives, I'll give you this if you do this. And praise the Lord, we don't need to do that, because that would be wouldn't be a very fun job. Okay, what is your audience and what is their vision? And I'd like to spend a little bit of time on this one, because I think this is probably a vital point. It's important to identify your audience. And in growing your mailing list, whether you have an email mailing list or a snail mail mailing list, identifying your audience, the truth of the matter is you won't, and you don't even want to try to just go through the phone book and get addresses and send mailings out to people that probably couldn't care less about what you're doing. But to identify your audience. And at Christian Aid, our audience is primarily conservative Amish and Mennonite groups, conservative Anabaptist groups. And it goes beyond that. There are many, many supporters that wouldn't be conservative Anabaptist, but that is our focal point, is creating a channel through which conservative Anabaptist people can channel their funds into projects that they can feel comfortable with. So it's important to identify your audience. Who are you trying to connect with? And Paul, this is interesting too, that Paul preached differently depending on who he was preaching to. If he was on Mars Hill, his style was a little bit different than if he was in the synagogue. So find ways to communicate that connects with your audience. And something we try to be really careful with is things like pictures. What type of pictures do you put in your newsletters? And it's important to be thinking about your audience and how they'll perceive things. One thing that we face on an ongoing basis is the issue of modesty, and it's not getting any better as far as pictures from abroad. Now, some countries are really, really good, but some of the countries where we're operating, modesty isn't necessarily a strong point. And we take the approach that, well, we're pretty careful about what types of pictures we put in our newsletter. And the idea is not to deceive people and hide things that we're doing so nobody is aware of it. But if there's a recipient that's just horrendously immodestly dressed, it's not necessary to picture that person in the newsletter, especially thinking about your audience. And we can kind of take the approach that, hey, we've been abroad, we've been in prisons. We know how people are. Other people don't understand how these different cultures operate and that type of thing. And we can kind of take the approach that we're going to let the chips fall where they may. We're going to show it exactly like it is. But that's, for the most part, just not a very, very good idea. It's good to think about the sensitivity of your audience. Another thing, in relation to that, how many of you all, your organizations are working abroad? Okay. In the countries where you operate, how many, would people have cell phones? Okay. Now, would this be dealing with poverty? Reaching out to physical need? Somewhat, not necessarily. Okay. Any of you that have traveled abroad realize that no matter if you go to Bangladesh or Haiti, where it's very, very poor, you will see very, very poor people with cell phones. And that is really, really hard for people to understand. And it's even a little bit hard for me to understand sometimes how all those dynamics work. But cell phones, for the most part, are cheap, and maybe an aunt, uncle, or a cousin from the U.S. provided the funds that you can have the cell phone. And there's a long list of reasons why, yes, you're living in a house that is hardly suitable for your family, but you do have a cell phone. So, what are you going to do? You're sending out a newsletter to 40,000 conservative Anabaptist people, and it could be that 75% of them have never traveled abroad. And you have a picture of a family that you're providing some support for, and they have a cell phone. Actually, they're holding it in their hand in the picture. We can understand why that is, but if 75% of your support base is not going to understand why that is, just simply because of lack of exposure, it's good to think about those things and not to be unnecessarily, to create unnecessary worries in people's minds. I've been asked that question when I give presentations. Hey, that school teacher in this school that you're supporting in Haiti, was that a cell phone that I saw that teacher holding? So it's good to think about those things. Again, not trying to be deceptive, but just to be reasonable. A huge portion of our audience are from Old Order groups. I wouldn't say the majority, but we have a lot of Old Order Amish and Old Order Mennonite supporters. And that probably varies with your organization. But there again, keep in mind the people that are reading your newsletter and how they will perceive what you're doing. Another thing is things like probably most of us are using some sort of electronic technology to communicate. But there again, it's good, even if we recognize that through the web or whatsoever, forms of electronic media that we're communicating, that there is going to be an element of our supporters that could be very, very uncomfortable with that. So if we create a web-only presence and are just constantly hyping, donate on the web, donate on the web, it'll save our secretary's time, you can do it on your own, don't bother us by calling us, just contribute on the web, you're going to leave, depending on who you are, a lot of your supporters behind and even make them feel uncomfortable. So it's good to think about those things. Who's your audience? Set goals for your newsletter. And I think this is really, really important. What are you trying to accomplish? Okay, thinking about growing your mailing list. I was in a session yesterday and they were talking about this car, and this was in relation to evangelism, but this car that someone parks in the garage and they go and they change the oil and they make sure the tire pressure's right and they polish it and they wax it, but they let it sit in the garage. And occasionally they might take it out and drive it around, but they bring it back to the garage and polish it and wash it and make it look beautiful and attractive and pleasing to the eye, but they never take it out and drive it, except on rare occasions. And we can do that too. We can make a newsletter, a mailing, an email very, very attractive, but you have to have somebody to send it to. So it's important to continually cultivate your mailing list and make sure that people are on there that would like to be on there, and continue adding people to that mailing list and trying to cultivate ways that people can sign up to be on your mailing list, because a stagnant mailing list will not benefit your organization much at all. So it's important to take time to grow your mailing list, and that can be done in a variety of ways. If you have input or questions along the way, we will have an opening for some questions at the end, but feel free to just pipe up and say something or raise your hand or something if you would like to talk a bit more about something. Set a rigid mailing date. Now, I'm assuming that probably many of you aren't necessarily working full-time to put a newsletter together for the organization that you're working with. Am I assuming right? Because we have a variety of sizes of organizations. In most cases, it wouldn't be reasonable to have a full-time person putting a newsletter together to mail to your supporters. But one thing that can happen is if you don't have a mailing schedule, that this is when this mailing needs to be sent, this is how often this email will be sent, likely it won't happen if you have other things to do. I have a little business, a coffee roasting business, and I have a email that I used to send out about once a week, but it takes a lot of time. I have a full-time job, and this is kind of a little hobby thing. And I have no doubt that if I would invest a lot of time into getting that email out on a regular basis frequently, I could increase my sales by a pretty great deal. But that kind of gets pushed aside with my other responsibilities, family, work, whatnot all. But it is in our good interest to set a mailing date. Quarterly can be a good idea. Monthly, if you want to do that often, or even twice a year, but just do it on a regular basis and decide when you would like that newsletter to be going out, or else it probably won't get done. If you're doing a newsletter for fundraising, observe the response. That's something I love doing, is when we work together as a team to put a newsletter together, then 2 months later, I can have one of the secretaries print out a report of all the responses to the specific articles. That could just really, really be encouraging to see, you know what, connected with somebody, or else there's just very, very minimal response, and then we'll talk about, you know, why did this maybe not connect with people? So observing the response is a good thing to do. Okay, a bit about the importance of attractive design. Now, I'm not a designer, even though I can look at something and say that's looks pretty or that looks ugly, but I'm not a designer by trade. I usually just give opinions about that to the designers, but let them decide whatever they want to do. Use pleasant colors and find good pictures. And that's something, in many cases, you have to work with the field if your organization is working abroad. But find pictures that connect with people. I got a newsletter this week that was attractive and well done. The fonts and things looked nice, but I don't think there was one picture in the whole thing. And that was a bit discouraging for me to think about wading through that whole sea of text to get to whatever information that I needed. So even for the sake of breaking up your newsletter, pulling people into an article, a picture can really do a lot. Kind of as a matter of interest, on this newsletter here, here's a picture of a family, a mother that has, she and her husband have 14 children, and they're from Ukraine. And someone saw this picture and read that article and made contact with Christian Aid and said that they grew up in a family of 14 and they wanted to make 14 sets of clothes for all of these children. So there were some logistical challenges as far as getting those clothes to the end. But nevertheless, that picture and that article connected with that person. And it may not have if the picture would not have been included. Find someone with design experience. And this is, you know, we can try to keep our costs down as far as presenting our organization to the public, and we can have the mentality that this is one corner that we can cut. We're going to stick things in Microsoft Word and have whosoever the chairman of the board put it together, and we're going to print it out and mail it, and that's one way we can save. But I think it's in your organization's best interest to get someone who does have a level of experience with design to compile the newsletter. And those people are around. Probably most of you have a print shop in your community, maybe operated by one of your church people, and they're experienced in putting a newsletter together in an attractive way and presenting things to the public. So it's money well spent to have someone like that design a newsletter for you. So that's something that I think would be valuable. Actually, Christian Aid did that. Carlisle Printing used to design Christian Aid's newsletter, but now that has all come in-house, which is really handy and really nice. But before the days that the resources were available to do that in-house, we outsourced it. I think that's money well spent. The importance of good text. Find someone who is a good writer and has a heart for your work. And those two go together nicely. Someone that enjoys writing and has a heart for your work and wants to present what you're doing to the public. And I'm sure they'll be happy to help you. Don't skimp on editing. It's amazing how things can be improved by a group. And there again, we can think, you know, we're going to cut corners. We're going to type this thing up. We're going to print it out and mail it out. Nobody else is going to see it if there are spelling mistakes or grammatical errors. We're going to let the tree fall where it lays. There again, the credibility of what you're doing, whether we like it or not, does somewhat. That is a reflection of that. And also try to be okay with someone editing your work. And this was when I started working for Christian Aid. That was a little disheartening for me because all of these articles that come through the newsletter go down through this funnel. It's kind of like there are, probably any given article would be gone over by maybe even as many as 5 people. And people are looking for a variety of things. Some people are looking for grammatical things. Other people are looking for, is there a better way to communicate this that would connect a little better with people? Other people are looking for security concerns as far as some of the things that are done in countries where security is sensitive. And others are looking for things that might be sensitive to our supporters. So it's important to have at least 2 people maybe involved in the process. And be okay if someone gets what you worked on and tweaks it around. Maybe even sometimes it looked more like tearing it down and completely rebuilding it. But if it's a way to improve it and a way to better communicate, praise the Lord. It's a team effort, and it's something that we are working together on. But that can be difficult. Here's an example of just something we had here recently. This is a little article that I wrote for one recent CAM newsletter talking about the crisis in Mosul. And maybe I'll take the time to just quickly read through this text here, and you can follow along up from where you are. All right, crisis in Mosul. In northern Iraq, the battle to liberate the city of Mosul from ISIS began in October. Iraqi and Kurdish armies freed surrounding villages and then entered the city itself. Now, several months later, the battle rages on. Tens of thousands of people have been displaced to temporary camps. Others stayed inside Mosul where basic supplies like clean water or fuel for heating and cooking have diminished. CAM has been providing relief to displaced people living in camps and to those living in the city by distributing blankets, food items, and kerosene. Nice-ish. Some good things. It's a really interesting photo. There's something about that photo that's kind of unique. You know, it's a family that's walking. They're culturally dressed. They're pushing a wheelbarrow with some aid in it, and a child is laying over what is probably a sack of flour or something like that. So that's a strong point. That's a good thing. It's a good picture that makes people stop and look at it. Oh, I want to know more about this situation here. All right, some bad things. A title that really doesn't do much for me, Crisis in Mosul. Okay, that doesn't connect with me terribly much. And also, this just gives bald facts. As far as something that touches me, yeah, sure, ISIS, I know they're bad, but I've never dealt with them personally. 10,000 people being displaced. You know, I've never even seen a crowd of 10,000 people that I'm aware of. That's a number I'm not completely, can't connect with that much. Clean water, yeah, that's bad that people don't have clean water, but it's something I've always had, so that's a little hard for me to connect with. So in this little article here, there's really nothing to grab a hold of you and think, oh, you know, this is a situation I would like to help. And no doubt there would have been a lot of people that would have responded to that, mainly or maybe because it's something that's in the news constantly. But one of my fellow team members said, hey, we got a report from the field here recently. Why don't we try to liven this up a little bit? And this came from a report that was from Joe Fries, and it was really, really good, really, really touching. And they had suggested changing the title, Aid for ISIS Victims. Now, that's maybe not just an absolutely heart-gripping title, but it's better than Crisis in Mosul. All right, now let's read, maybe I'll just read the second paragraph there. We do give some facts. Actually, I'll read the whole thing. I'll take the time to do that. Iraqi and Kurdish armies continue their attempt to liberate the city of Mosul from the grip of ISIS. Even words like the grip, from the grip of ISIS. To escape the fighting, tens of thousands have moved to temporary camps. One night, as our team was getting ready to leave a camp, they saw new arrivals from Mosul sitting in a dark, fenced area with fires going to warm themselves. And then a quote from the field. Many of the people were limping. Babies were crying. Children walked barefoot, crying as they went. A team member wrote, the people had old and dirty... Sorry, I read that wrong. Children walked barefoot, crying as they went, a team member wrote. The people had old and dirty clothes, long beards and pant legs cut off above the ankles, a requirement under ISIS. As the battle to retake Mosul continues, CAM is providing blankets, food, kerosene, and other aid. Pray that recipients will feel God's love through this help from Christians. So, you know, I could have been really offended that my first attempt at presenting the Mosul situation wasn't embraced and accepted in its entirety. But this writing here is far superior to the one that I put together. There's, you know, crying babies, mothers. I think even in the original report, it talked about some mothers crying, children walking barefoot, crying as they went, people in old and dirty clothes and long beards, which would have been a requirement by ISIS. There's something about that we can connect with. There's some human interest there. It's not just a bunch of bald facts. So that was greatly improved. As a note of connecting with supporters, one thing that I thought it might be a good idea to take out is long beards. And the reason for that is we'll have a lot of people that are getting this newsletter that have long beards. And we don't want to make them feel like we think long beards are something bad. You know, it's connected with ISIS. You shouldn't have long beards. It's terrible if you have long beards. That's what ISIS says. It makes their people have. So just something simple like that, you know, to keep in mind. It probably wouldn't have been a huge issue, I assume, but it's good to keep those things in mind. And then here's the finished product after the designer got a hold of it, and I won't take the time to read over it. Something else that is important is to give people a response. Okay, they read this, they're touched by it. Well, what are they going to do about it? Are they going to pray about it? It's good to invite people to pray for a situation. And also, there are many people that do want to contribute to a project, so it's good to give that opportunity to them. We call that a call to action. Okay, I've read this, I've been touched. I really do want to help. I want to do something. Now, what can I do? Can I get involved? Can I volunteer? Can I go along on a prison crusade, like in your organization? Can I contribute financially? Can I become a part of a prayer team? There's something I want to do. What can I do? What does a good newsletter consist of? Heart-touching stories, and we talked about that here. Include names and other details if possible. It's not just a person. It's an actual person. It's a person that has a name. Accurate information, and this is important, is to make sure that your information is accurate. In my presentations, at schools, I've been saying that, and this was coming from what I thought was a pretty reputable source, that every 5 seconds, one child in the world dies of hunger-related causes. And then I read an article just here recently about why that is probably not the best fact to be throwing out, because when people hear that, they're thinking of these gaunt, thin children that are starving to death, or that's what they're visualizing in their mind, when in reality there are lots of other things connected with it, including, you know, parasites, lack of clean water, so on and so forth. So it's good to make sure that your information, your statistics are accurate. A good newsletter, especially if you're working abroad, gives a glimpse of global reality. Shows real people with real needs and an opportunity. What can your supporters do to help? This is a newsletter article that came from one of our field staff. Not everyone is on the field is cut out to write, but there's a lady that's working in Kenya. Her husband is the director, Ms. Jamila Kurtz, And she produces some really, really good stuff. And this is one of the articles, along with some pictures, that she sent in. I think she had just sent it to her family just for their interest, and we grabbed a hold of it and got her permission to publish it in the CAM newsletter. Just touching on a few things here, there are several pictures that are really interesting. As far as giving a picture of global reality, you can see the man up there has his earlobes are quite stretched out, so that makes you wonder a bit about, you know, why that is. And also, the article contains a variety of very interesting things, some cultural things, like as a young boy, his earlobes were stretched and he often drank the blood of a cow, which were common practices. And then it goes on and talks about his journey. Down at the bottom of the first column there, after a life of sin, it says, Maina says it was good for the hard times to come and drive him from his home, because in Nakuru he didn't only find safety, he found the Lord. Quotes are really good. I love good quotes. Jesus can save any man, Maina says. Now Maina is part of a conservative Mennonite church near Nakuru. And a variety of other interesting things there that connected with people. This was an article that brought in a significant response because it was interesting to people. It was a real person with a real need, interesting cultural things that people people found interesting. What does a good newsletter not consist of? High pressure. We talked about that a bit. Scripture to put supporters on a guilt trip. And a classic is, but whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? And that can be really easy to use things like that to wrench people into supporting you. That's a scripture. It's true. But to use it in a way to make people feel guilty is probably not the best idea. This is something that I feel passionately about. Stories that degrade other cultures and elevate Americans. That's something I think we need to be really, really careful about, is stories that do that. Things like, or even kind of degrading things, you know, just horrific roads, you know, it's unimaginable, you know, awful infrastructure within the country. You know, it's okay to communicate some of those things. People are always late. Time doesn't mean anything to people. You know, work ethic is kind of non-existent. Trash is all over the place. You know, you wish people could come to the United States and see how clean it is here and so on and so forth. I think you get the picture. But stories that elevate Americans. And American hero stories. I think all of us that have served abroad, that's really easy to want, is that hero feeling, that here we were Superman that swept into a situation that was really messed up and difficult, and we fixed it up, and then here's the result, and we're the one that was responsible for that. So that's something that's good to be careful about. We actually try to be careful about picturing our staff members in our newsletter excessively. Occasionally you'll see it, but just putting that focus on staff, which there's a time and a place for that, no doubt. Okay, finishing up here. Here is a newsletter that I made. This is my design, extent of my design expertise. Actually, I tried to intentionally make it pretty ugly, just to make a few points. There are several things here that, well, actually, let's just open it up here. What are some things on here that you, I won't even ask you what you like, because there's not a whole lot to like. What are some obvious issues here? Very good. Okay, branding is important. Just have your branding over something. Easily identifiable. Anything else? Oh, yes. Just fonts, no consistency. Hard to read. You know, we can try to come up with these really squirrely, whirly fonts, but, you know, people have to get out their glasses to figure out what we're even trying to communicate. And not to mention, it just doesn't look the... All these different fonts don't look the best. Yes? There you go. Very good.
That's what you intended.
Yeah, that's right. Any other specifics that we had covered, or even other things that stand out?
It's not flowing.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Very good.
And your perfectionist is off.
Oh, you're right. You're exactly right. It's amazing. Right. That's right. Very good. High pressure. For the cost of the burger that you just bought at McDonald's, you could save a malnourished child's life. Or spiritual life or spiritual death. That all depends on you. If you give money, then the blood won't be on your hands. Kind of that type of thing.
It's not right.
That's right. Actually, that's true. I was going to mention before that they say, or we say, that someone should be able to read through one of our newsletters in about 5 minutes. And that's not reading the all the fine print and everything, but get the general gist of the newsletter. How many of you all just have oodles of extra time on your hands? I think probably most of us don't. Very good point. And if it's something that's tedious, you can hardly read the font, lots of text that you have to wade through, nothing really interesting to pull you in, you know, I have other things that need to be done. If you see too many things about donations. Mm-hmm. Good point. Just that high pressure, giving the feeling. That's what we are all about as contributions.
Mm-hmm. Different ways to connect others.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. And also, this is something that I rather disdain, is the whole idea that if I give a contribution that I can help change the world, because I know that's not true. So if someone, and especially if I get things that are addressed from a nonprofit to my name, unless I personally know the person that's mailing the thing, if it says, you know, Dear Weston, you know, people in South Sudan are perishing because of hunger. I know that person has no clue who I am, and I have no clue who they are, and they're attempting to appeal to my warm, fuzzy feelings in order to connect me. So it's good to keep those things in mind. Anything you'd like to discuss? That's right. And that is very true. I think all of our organizations, if one of our supporters would die, the organization wouldn't go belly up. But if all of our supporters would die, our organization would go. So all of those people working together do play an important part in the work, and we don't want to undermine that. That's right. There are many, many, you know, Amish and Mennonite conservative people's addresses are documented in many and many varied places. So he's holding up signs that say 1 minute, and that was about 1 minute ago. One tiny other little thing. Something I think it's good I was going to point that out, the whole emphasis that save us money so we don't need to print newsletters and we're going to email it to you. There's a time and a place for emailed newsletters, but the delete button is very easy to push. And it's a little easier than actually throwing something in the trash can. There's a time and a place for it, but something to keep in mind. God bless you. Thank you for your attention. And God bless you as you create that link between the work that you're doing and your supporters.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.